Hello and welcome to the Ochre Cave Audio Report, recording on Sunday, September 24th, not the 4th at all, 2006. I am Mike Sugarbaker.
And this is Alan Sugarbaker.
And I'm Chris Hannerham, Ben Game in Oakland, California.
So, Battle Lore, also Battle Lore, and I heard there was this game coming out called Battle Lore.
Battle Lore.
Yeah, people are just crazy psyched about this game online.
I've seen posts even as strangely enough, at storygames.com.
Yeah, that was where I heard about it.
Okay.
I think that was what I gave the shout to when we posted to the site. But yeah, I mean, Story Games oddly already has its small but vocal faction of hardcore Memoir 44 fans.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the explanation there.
Gotcha.
But it's really looking like the buzz for this game is spreading out to people who you wouldn't think of as Memoir players, but people who, there seems to have been this latent hunger for like a big fantasy game that, you know, I guess wasn't satisfied by War of the Ring or whatever. Or maybe it's just a hunger for, you know, another big box fantasy board game, and this time FFG isn't stepping up to fill it with a new one, you know?
There's some demand for fantasy board games. We
definitely.
We recently imported in a game called Prophecy out of the former Czechoslovakia, and it's kind of Talisman-like. And then just a couple days ago, we got War Angel in, which is a game I've been really interested in, and we almost sold through the first import we brought in like less than a week.
Wow!
So and on top of that, we've got Battle Lore coming, which, man, oh man, it looks like Days of Wonder has had to stop production on a couple of their other games just to get as many as they think they're going to need for this one.
Yeah, well, that's been the big elephant in the room on all this buzz is, like, are they going to pull this launch off, you know?
From what I understand, Days of Wonder learned their lessons early on, unlike some of these other board game guys. Mm-hmm. And when they made that November announcement for release, mm-hmm. The game was already on the ship on the way over.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So they don't make those announcements unless they're pretty darn certain, unless, like, there's a port strike or some crazy-ass thing. hey, it's happened.
Oh, I know.
We could, they'll hit the launch for this game.
Right on.
Yeah, that was exciting right there, just to hear that, you know, they're on it, so.
Cool. That is very encouraging.
Yeah.
But to talk a little more about the game for those who haven't heard about it, basically it's Richard Borg, who has done more than one adaptation already of his system that, at least to my mind, is most popular with Memoir 44. There was also Battle Cry, which was the Civil War system.
That was pretty popular too. But...
Yeah, well, that got the Avalon Hill reprint when Avalon Hill was alive again. A couple of years ago.
Uh-huh. The other use of that system, I think, is Command & Colors Ancients.
Yeah, that's the more recent one, and it's a little more low-key as far as production values. But yeah, that's the Rome and Carthage.
Yeah, people are digging that one, too.
Definitely. That is what I have heard.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I think, is going to be more different from the others in terms of game design. Certainly, they have publicized a lot of stuff about being able to kind of customize your army through this whole... banners thing, and being able to say not only which units are yours, but something about what abilities they have, with a fairly elegant and compressed little graphical language that you just pop into the plastic minis with these little banners, these you know, standard bearer kinds of guys.
Mm-hmm. And gets a splash of color into the units without forcing them to use different colors of plastics or asking their consumers to paint them all, which would kind of be a cop-out.
Yeah, kind of.
Just kind of.
So, yeah, I'm just excited that, because I've also discovered, I picked up Memoir 44 fairly recently, and I've been wanting to play it, and I've been finding that a lot of gamers that I know, they're just kind of turned off by the World War II theming.
Hmm.
You know, they don't want to feel like they're war gamers or something.
Weird.
I think it is weird, but yeah, I had people tell me that, like, yeah, just the World War II thing just kind of kills my erection, you know? And that was their phrasing, not mine. I want to be clear about that.
How many people tell you about things that kill their erections?
As few as I can get away with.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I think this may open some doors, and I think it may also be richer gameplay.
Well, and the production value on the game looks fantastic, too.
Yes.
200 plastic miniatures in the box. What are they doing, $70 on this one?
70,
yeah.
This will be another one in the range of Descent and things.
Yeah.
And I have played some Descent, but we'll talk about that when it's time to talk
Holy
about that.
Holy crap.
I know.
Oh.
Wow. Hold on, I just have to, like, sit down for a second. You are now the gamer of all of us, and that just almost makes me bitter.
I've got what seems to be a pretty dependable regular group for board gaming and some indie RPGs, and it's great.
Damn, I hate you.
I am a fortunate man.
Yes,
careful. The moment you say that, someone will start dating someone else in the group and then break up, and it'll all explode.
Yeah, I can't jinx it. Is that really the most common way to game groups break up? I'm inclined to think it's not.
No, it's usually drama over rules and friendships.
Somebody shuts somebody down, and then somebody else says, that's not realistic, and then goes off to design some other system, and yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Battle Lore, the exciting thing is we got Days of Wonder to agree to come do a pre-release demo at our next mini-con.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah, on October 21st. So we kind of scored there. I'm pretty excited about that. So I'm also going to try and talk them into selling me a quote unquote demo copy. while they're there.
Yeah, good luck with that.
You never know, man. But so that was some exciting news. So one more reason to come to the mini con this time.
Okay, you got your plug in. We can.
Just one?
The first of many, to be sure.
Thank you,
no,
thank you.
No
Alan
doubt.
Understands. Alan understands. Go, Mike. Come on. Bring it back then. Let's go.
Okay, well, I mean,
okay, let's go.
Have we got anything else about Battle Lore?
It's going to be cool.
Yeah. I have to admit, I haven't looked at their pre-launch blog since they announced the game.
The weekly teasers are a good way to build up the hype in those already foaming at the mouth players, so I think it's a good plan for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little bit over that strategy myself because it often feels like they're not revealing it. Well, it's really, as so often happens, it's WizKids that killed this for me, because it's like in the run-up to any of their expansions or any of their games, it's like, hey, here's another unit. It's kind of like it's a little bit of a cargo cult thing, like they kind of don't understand what teasers really are, you know, what they're for and how they should work.
That doesn't seem to be the case. That doesn't seem to be the case here. They are pretty well-considered little articles highlighting one part of the game or another, one rules thing, one faction thing.
As I said, I haven't looked at it, so.
You should.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to note that what I think is the most awesome thing about Battle Lore is the fact that somebody decided, and I think just smartly decided, that they were going to go hell of retro 80s, Talisman, Games Workshop-esque type art on that box.
Yeah.
It's just really, really cool.
I can support that. I can definitely get behind that. But yeah, so Battle Lore, and there's no D on the end there. Got announced. We talked in the last show about a couple of other announcements, things coming out in the November time frame. Long Live the King, kind of a LARP in a box deal from White Wolf. While we're talking about White Wolf, a bit of news came out in the last week or so. It would seem that the Art House branch of White Wolf went and picked up the rights to Big Eyes Small Mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a first step towards White Wolf maybe trying a Mongoose-ish kind of a strategy?
It might be the first step toward Mark McKinnon having some money to pay some people.
Oh.
I'm sorry, well, that's what a lot of people are thinking right now.
Well,
and
sure.
I like Mark, and I really hope he pulls everything out, and this is a good first step for him, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is certainly one side of any Guardians of Order project finding a new home at this point.
Any money coming his way is a good thing right now, as long as he uses it the right way. And maybe this will be Art House kind of going the Mongoose direction of bringing in... Is Pendragon under the Art House banner as well?
I think so.
I think so, too. Just bringing in all of those loose little games that people would like to see, but not well enough to make a whole company thrive off of that one game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So that might be the way of the future for some of these larger companies or mid-sized companies,
mm-hmm.
yeah. luxury class companies.
It's also technically a matter of public record, but I don't think it's really surfaced apart from discussions on the Forge and stuff. That Art House approached Vincent Baker about doing an edition of Dogs in the Vineyard.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it turns out that they didn't, that Dogs still sells well enough for Vincent that they didn't really have a deal that made sense for him financially. You know, he sells a lot direct, so he still does very well off that. I mean, it sounds like they are certainly being really aggressive with Art House and looking for a lot of different things, a lot of different systems, and trying to really expand that brand.
Cool. Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, I'll tell you what, if you're going to compare them to a Mongoose, at least their production value is just like heads and tails above Mongoose.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Just night and day. The Pendragon stuff, not a fan really of the game much, but man, it looks nice. Super nice.
I haven't looked at it myself. But yeah.
You know, let's take a quick note here, actually something that just came into my head. We were talking about board games a moment ago, uh-huh. and Avalon Hill doesn't seem to exist much anymore because Wizards of the Coast just contacted us with like no notice and said, we are scrapping Monsters Menace America, Nexus Ops, Vegas Showdown, Rocketville, Skull and Crossbones, and Betrayal on House of the Hill. If you want to order some, do it by Friday. The rest are being destroyed.
Whoa. That makes me very sad.
Our sales rep even was like, you know, there's a couple titles in there that, yeah, totally. They sucked. But Betrayal? You know, that's still one of our better selling kind of, you know, group games.
So I like Nexus Ops. I thought that was a good one.
Yeah.
Nexus Ops was fun. Vegas Showdown was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we actually were given the opportunity and we ordered, I don't know, two or three cases of a couple of those different games and brought the price down to $20. So I think you know, with the discount that they were giving out, if you want the game, go to your store now and see if they're doing kind of a deal or something like that, or mm-hmm. if anything, buy it while it's still around.
Yeah. Yeah. This whole thing makes me very sad. I mean, clearly things like Sword and Skull were a swing and a miss.
Yeah, it's Rockabilly too.
Yeah, but there's just so many missed opportunities in that line.
The fact that there was never a Betrayal expansion?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know? I mean, God, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it, Avalon Hill is now back to just basically being Robo Rally and the Axis and Allies stuff, I think.
They're keeping Robo Rally out there.
They did not mention they were slagging Robo Rally, and if they were, I'm totally sad.
Mm-hmm.
That game still sells just fine.
Cool. While we're talking about Wizards, we wanted to follow up on Dreamblade and kind of lumped in there some of the other games that launched at Gen Con and just seeing what is finding its footing amongst that sort of CMG, CCG wave that hit this year at Gen Con.
Right.
See if anything is you know, seems to have legs thus far and what doesn't. Chris, can you speak a little I know that you personally are playing a little bit, but can you speak to how Dreamblade is doing for you?
Sales really slowed down on it. People are still kind of interested. But much as we kind of expected, a lot of the D&D Get Minis guys that, you know, Wizards really wanted to move over, you know, to this game,
mm-hmm.
they haven't moved them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very much the, man, this sounds like such a fun game. I really don't want to buy it as collectible. And, you know, if I could just get kind of a board game version of this with fixed pieces, I would totally do it. But mm-hmm. I'm not going to buy a collectible game.
Yeah.
I know so many people that play and collect either D&D miniatures or Star Wars miniatures, or a few that collect both.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of them, if I asked them, would say, yeah, I'm ready for another game, or yeah, I'm ready to drop one or the other for some new thing. They are devoted to those. They plan their big purchases around the releases, and that's it. You know, they don't have much leeway for other things, especially not a whole other collectible game system.
Yeah, it's totally true. You're not, you know, alone on seeing people like that.
Yeah, yeah. We talked in the last show about HorrorClix being out of stock at, was it at WizKids or at the distributors, or is there a meaningful distinction there?
Big distinction. WizKids, last I heard, was out, but all the distributors still had it.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, they basically printed as much as they need to get that first wave out.
All right. Does there seem to be player response? I mean,
it is not selling in our store. We had our initial first little bit, and then it just died. And it is in very, very prominent placement in the store, too. So, kind of a bummer there.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Do you expect that to pick up at all through October?
Well, I hope so, because that's the period of time that we need to keep it until we can return what we don't sell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for WizKids' sake, I really hope we don't have to return any. So.
Yeah. Have they announced, I don't know how much communication they do about just, you know, their marketing efforts, but they must have something up their sleeve to push this game in conjunction with Halloween.
Not that I've heard.
No?
Just getting it back into stock would be the first step. Stock on their end.
Well, I mean, marketing should be doing their job of making people excited during, you know, this game's season. What did I just read? That Halloween is now like a $4 billion industry or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Tap into that. You know, do what you have to. But I also
get yourself
don't know,
into those little Halloween costume stores or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't go too often, so I don't know if HorrorClix is actually in the big box stores. Hmm. So I would assume it is. I would assume it's at Walmart and Target and places like that. But
yeah, I don't know. Either.
I don't know that it is.
With those display box starters, I would think that's a beautiful product for those settings.
I would agree. So, but yeah, dead in the water at our store.
And I'm just assuming that of the CCGs, things like Eve Second Genesis, and did they actually come out with World of Warcraft TCG yet?
It's on its way.
Okay.
We're going to stop that. That's one that I think has a chance of having that crossover to people who, you know, they want those in-game items, and we've taken a couple box pre-orders now on people doing just that.
Well, if they want in-game items, is that really a crossover story?
Why wouldn't it be?
Well, crossing over means crossing over, right? I mean,
well, but this could be the gateway that makes that crossover. How do you know?
If they play it instead of just buy it for the codes.
Yeah.
They probably will. You know, it's one of those things where I think those people have the intention of actually playing the game as well as a bonus. You know, treat the game aspect as a bonus to getting all your crap for your character.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I've got my doubts.
I'm putting hope there. It's the first thing in ages that actually makes there, you know, be a reason for the CCG even to exist, frankly. You
sure.
know?
It's true.
So, at least it's got that going for it.
Right on. With that, we had a thing that we threw out there in July, and we asked y'all out there in the listening audience to comment on it.
Which has nothing to do with what we just talked about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was my crafty segue plan that you just ruined, but...
Oh, sorry.
We had something we wanted to throw out there and ask people to comment on. And, of course, as soon as we did this, our comments broke for about a week. And we didn't get much on it. But we wanted to talk about it again. And I think we even have a better strategy this time, because we've just gone ahead and made our lists. And we know that they will enrage all of you. And that will bring us a lot of controversy and a lot of hits. Yay.
Hooray.
But what we asked people to think about is, what are your top five role-playing games of all time? By, you know, whatever standard, you know, we're not going to lay out, you know, you have to pick most influential or you have to pick this or that. You choose your standard. What are the top five of the history of the medium? And we have lists, mostly. And we didn't work out exactly how we're going to make these lists fight each other. But the first thing I will ask is Dungeons & Dragons on every list? I will tell you it is on my list.
That surprises the hell out of me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's there.
No, it's on mine.
It is? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Alan, is it at the top of your list?
Maybe.
All right, so how do we want to do this? I kind of want to make Alan go first.
Do
Damn it.
It.
Well, who do you want to have go first?
Well, I'm not, so...
If I go first, I will just... My list is the crazy list, of course.
Oh, fine. All right.
All right.
So, first off, I'll say D&D. I just put down as all of its various iterations. Otherwise, it takes all five.
Yeah.
D&D kind of set the tone. It was my first experience with role-playing. I continue to play it regularly. It has evolved, not necessarily in all the right directions, but it has evolved. And, I've laughed, I've cried.
Well, already you've said something kind of controversial. Do you feel that there's been five different distinct versions of D&D that are all better than anything else?
No.
No?
I think D&D as one whole entity, the game system of D&D, each has built on the last, and I've played each version, so I'm just... lumping them all together on my list.
You just said that if you split them up, it would take all five.
Basic D&D.
Mm-hmm.
Advanced D&D.
Mm-hmm.
D&D Second Edition. Mm-hmm. D&D 3.0. D&D 3.5.
That's really?
Five. Yep.
Okay.
Now, they're not all that different from each other, but in some ways they are very different, especially if you jump from one end of the list to the other. So they're all basically the same thing done different ways and evolved in different directions.
Hmm.
RuneQuest is also on my list.
Holy crap.
Didn't expect that, did you?
No. No.
Really like RuneQuest. Used to play it a lot with my friend Charlie. The entire experience of that coming from D&D was very different for me while still being fantasy, which is my favorite genre, so I really enjoyed the skill-based, basic role-playing system used in that way. I'm sure I would have enjoyed Cthulhu as well. I just never really got into that. I've read some of it, but I've never actually played Cthulhu.
Yeah, I haven't either.
I've watched some Cthulhu, and I've played in Chaosium headquarters itself, but we weren't playing Cthulhu, so
mm-hmm.
That's kind of a shame, actually.
If you guys are ever together again and I can get, 4 hours of your time, I will
play
Cthulhu
happen.
Game. No, you've got to make it happen.
It's a good game.
All right.
Go ahead.
Paranoia.
Yes.
Paranoia, brilliant game, brilliant theme, brilliant execution, just the dark... humorous, any game that makes you laugh at your own death genuinely and not just I died.
Mm-hmm.
It's great game. All of the products for it were themed well designed, and I'm talking about the original Paranoia. I don't know as much about Mongoose's Paranoia. I've heard good things about it, but I haven't checked it out as thoroughly as I would like.
Yeah, I would say Paranoia is on my list as well. I won't say where, but yeah, it's not the XP version. I would put Second Edition at the top.
I haven't even really put these in an order. I'm just kind of throwing them out there.
That's all right, too. That's cool.
Torg.
Yeah.
Torg, I thought, broke some new ground at the time, introduced more plot manipulation devices for the players, rather than keeping it all in the Game Master's hand with the drama deck idea, which they then, West End Games, then reused for their Master Book system, and that flopped pretty quickly, but they still really latched onto that idea and used it in other places. Just mixing all the genres up, something that I used to do in my very early D&D games, really badly, suddenly you've got a lightsaber and you chop the orc and stuff like that. But it does it pretty eloquently. It explains why it's working. It's just a really fun game to play around with. And despite the whole glass ninja flaw of the system where a spectacular dodge usually won't be hit, but if it is hit, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Despite that, I still really enjoy the system.
Yeah, I have to say it was a very, very close second. Very close runner-up to being on my top five list.
And after that, I'm going to have to say, waiting for number five to come along. I've experienced other games. I've played both West End games of Star Wars and the newer D20 Star Wars. They're both different flavors of good, but I would tend toward the earlier one. I like All Flesh Must Be Eaten from Eden Studios. There's a bunch of different games out there that I've played, enjoyed, but I wouldn't at this point put any of them on my top five list. I'm just kind of waiting.
I was kind of hoping that you would put D6 Star Wars on your list.
I thought about it. I was close to it, but no, I don't think
it's on mine.
It is? Good, yep. Good. Okay, that means I don't have to put it on mine.
Okay.
All right, should I go next, or Chris, do you want to swing?
Doesn't matter.
All right. Now, here's my list. I will go out there and say that I believe the top role-playing game of all time is Paranoia 2nd Edition.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because it is not only a fun game, but it is also a role-playing game that comments on the medium. And even irrespective of that, it's, to my mind, the first role-playing game that had literary content of its own that had a whole lot of value just standing on its own.
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell absolutely anybody in the world about the premise of Paranoia, and they're like, that sounds like great satire. And, you know, it's not leaning on Tolkien. It's influenced by a lot of things, but it's not a carbon copy the way that, and, you know, D&D isn't a carbon copy either. But it doesn't stand on its own feet in a literary sense the way that Paranoia does. So I just think Paranoia is a dazzling achievement that way. Second, on my list is Call of Cthulhu, which is also, controversial because I haven't played it ever. But again, I put it on the list because
its reputation precedes it.
So its reputation precedes it. Its reputation also for having, for being kind of a metagame, for being a game that's a little bit about the assumptions that came before it in the medium. You know, I really like that. It is not so much about the power fantasy. I mean, you know, if you concede that D&D is about a power fantasy, and not everybody does, but it's not all about that. It was very much undercutting that. It was saying, yeah, you know, if you play that way, you probably are going to die. And if you don't play that way, you're still probably going to die.
Cthulhu basically said, it's hopeless, just learn to live with it.
Yeah, and that was a very big statement to make for its time in a role-playing game. After that, I do have three more, but the order is a little more fuzzy. I'll just put them out in whatever order. D&D is on my list. I've played games of it and enjoyed it. Never quite as much as I want to. But part of it is, you know, I've got to give props to the place where the genre was born. And also that I think there are so many games, distinct games, possible with D&D that you kind of can't rule out that one of them is really great. You know? And even we're seeing that lately with all of the alternate rule books and remixes, things like Iron Heroes. You know, I'm kind of psyched to play Iron Heroes. You know, there's a lot of competition for that time and money, so I don't know that I will. But it is D&D, you know? Things like that. Rounding out my list, if somebody else is going to take Star Wars D6, I'm going to put Ghostbusters on there.
Wow.
Really?
Ghostbusters is the first game that I ever successfully ran I think, you know, I thought for a long time it was Paranoia, but I think ultimately it is Ghostbusters. And I think it is the, and this is something I kind of crystallized for me when I read it in an RPGNet review, so I can't claim full credit for this thought, but it is kind of one of the last games that we've had since Redbox D&D that actually taught people how to play and run a game from the ground up. It's been one of the best games out there for beginners.
Hmm.
You know, and I kind of miss it on that level. And I just had a blast doing it. Last on my list is I have to give props to Primetime Adventures because it's the game that brought me back in. And it's the game that, you know, if you look at, you know, all the noise and buzz in the community, PTA is about 2 years old now, and people are still playing it and loving it and really jazzed about the results. You know, it's a game that pretty clearly has staying power, and it's one of a fairly few of the indie RPGs that have demonstrated that kind of staying power thus far. And it is my current favorite role-playing game, so I'm going to throw it on there. And that is my list. And let speak now or forever hold your peace.
I don't want to hold anything.
Yeah. We'll leave the obvious jokes there aside.
Yeah.
Chris, how about your list?
All right, let's start with D&D First Edition. That's where it all began for me. Don't remember much about the rules, be honest with you. I haven't played it in like 20 years. but I do remember pages 73 through 75 of the DMG. And most importantly, I have learned, you know, from my experiences with First Edition D&D that I know what I want out of fantasy, and I know what I don't want out of fantasy. So it was a valuable foundation for the whole thing.
Right on.
Number two. Let's see. What do we want to go with number two?
Well, they're in no particular order, right?
Yeah, no, they aren't in particular order. And I think I'm going to go with Marvel Superheroes.
Yeah.
Gotta go there. That actually gave me, you know, aside from Star Frontiers, a different game to play than D&D. and I have a lot of fun.
Wait, did you play Star Frontiers?
I have Star Frontiers, and I played it recently.
Whoa!
Yeah.
We'll talk about that another time, but go on.
Ow. Sorry, dude. If you ever need a Drellocite, you know where to go. But Marvel Superheroes, and sadly Star Frontiers, does not make the list. It's kind of where I got my foundation and my building blocks for some of my role-playing that I do now. I really actually did like the system, and I remember quite a bit about it. It was very simple. You know, you were able to kind of really be cinematic with your battles due to the way that the charts were working, and that was neat. And it kind of made me realize what I like about Mutants and Masterminds right now. So, there you go.
Cool.
Number three. Let's go with D6 Star Wars, maybe?
Yeah.
It's mostly memories for me. It allowed me to roleplay into a universe that I was seriously, seriously interested in at that period of my life. The system was fine. I love rolling all the dice.
Great fun.
It was fun, and it's another system that I feel is fairly cinematic. It's not as crunchy as many others. And I do have some good memories about D6, and I'm kind of glad it's still out there.
I've got a ton of great memories about Star Wars D6. Great game. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah, it was good times. It does have the added benefit that when I was that age, that was the only thing being produced for Star Wars, and that made it pretty exciting all by itself. And a lot of that stuff they did for the Western game Star Wars, you know, eventually became part of the canon fiction. So I thought that was pretty cool, too.
Huh.
I can't remember what number four was.
That's okay. You can skip it if you want. We'll come back.
Shadowrun?
Yes, Shadowrun. See, Alan, it's good that we talked about this before because it's my brain. Shadowrun is literally still one of my favorite worlds. Super, super deep. The rules we will not speak of, as they shall rest in peace, but Well, and I don't say that of 4th edition. I do say that of editions 1 through 3, because I just really did not enjoy the mechanics at all. And the way the Matrix was written, I didn't know a single GM who ever used it. So, anyway. However, that being said, I think it was one of those deep worlds that allowed me to really, really frame some very cool adventures. It was one of the only games I ever consistently GM'd. It's just such a cool concept. You know, I got a little bit of everything out of it. Got my fantasy, I got my science fiction, just good stuff. So, and I'm going to take the guts, and I'm going to run it as a game here soon with Primetime Adventures, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Right on. Right on.
And number 5, with the hate it shall bequeath, is Vampire. So there you go.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. I didn't know that you had any Vampire under your belt.
It really framed a lot of my 90s role-playing, and I was really, really excited about the fact that they were really interested in telling a little bit more story than maybe dice rolling. No, lots of people don't agree, but that's okay. They wrote such a deep, deep, deep world. I mean, how many books were out for the World of Darkness and are now? So, really like Vampire. I really regret not having more than 5 spaces. Totally would have put, Dogs in the Vineyard would have made it. Mutants and Masterminds would have made it. And
right on.
The one that really honestly was number 6 for me was Unknown Armies. So
really? Right on.
Oh, God, that game is so good. But
I've known a couple of people who've gotten play of that under their belt. I didn't know you were one.
I've run it and played it. So
yeah. As far as Vampire, I mean, Vampire catches a lot of hate these days, both because of the huge proliferation of books and because of the perception that the mechanics don't really support the kind of storytelling that they said they were after.
Mm-hmm.
But for the time, you know, they were doing something that really needed doing.
Yeah, agreed. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And brought a huge number of women into the hobby.
That is one of the most important things about Vampire, in a non-very snarky comment, is that truly, truly, that and, again, no hate, ElfQuest, were two of the biggest, you know, kind of gender openers for us.
Oh my God, I'd completely forgotten that there was an ElfQuest RPG.
It went in the early 80s, if you were going to local cons, you could tell from like a mile away what the table was playing, if there was like 3 women and 3 guys playing the role-playing game. And it would be the Chaosium ElfQuest.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. I'd completely not blocked that out, but just forgotten it.
I still have a copy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right on. Right on. Alan, I think you had a copy at one point.
I still do.
Yeah, well, I'm the odd man out.
You are.
Go get one.
As usual.
Well, what I have a copy of, what I have a copy of that you don't, is a game that's coming out in November that's getting incredible buzz called Spirit of the Century, which is a pulp role-playing game that is being put out by Evil Hat Productions. They have been the shepherds of a system called Fate, which is a fudge variant that hasn't had a book in print for a really long time. I've been reading through this book. It's very exciting. I'm not a pulp gamer. I'm not a fudge gamer. And it's still exciting to me, but we don't have time to talk about it. Instead, we're going to talk about something else that we are overdue in talking about, which is War Machine Superiority. The boys at 2D6 Feet in a Random Direction have prepped this for us. So Chris and Brian Isakoff and Finn Kitsch, take it away on War Machine.
Hi, this is Mr. Finn from 2D6 Feet in a Random Direction, and I've got a review of the new War Machine book from Privateer Press today. It's called Superiority. It's 208 pages in a $35 softcover or a $45 hardcover. Both are full color. This is the 4th book for War Machine from Privateer, and it is... There aren't any new rules in here besides the rules for a new troop type, cavalry. The whole book is really devoted to troops, unlike some of the previous releases, which have focused primarily on warcasters or primarily on warjacks. What you've got in here is mostly foot troops, cavalry troops, one epic warcaster, and some named solos. And just one or two warjacks per faction. It's a very, very lovely book, I have to say. I've seen a lot of gaming books, especially in the miniatures arena, because I'm primarily a miniatures player, and this thing is phenomenal.
Where would you rate it against the other three books?
It's the best of the lot, hands down.
Even over Apotheosis?
Yeah, in terms of design and layout. Well, the problem with Apotheosis was that the form factor was much larger than a regular gaming book. You couldn't put it in your bag.
Right.
And it had fewer pages. The page count was much lower.
Okay.
So in this book, you've got beautiful painted artwork for every model entry.
Yep.
The book is laid out with very nice framing on each of the faction sections. So you've got the Kador symbol and red edging for the Kador stuff. You've got the Protectorate with brown edging for the Protectorate stuff. Signar with the Cygnus and the blue edging. I mean, it's really, really nicely done. And the artwork is very consistent all the way through, even though they've got a bunch of different artists working on it. Stylistically, it's very cohesive. And I think that's very nicely done.
I think on the Podthralls, at podthralls.com, on their podcast, I heard them mention that the picture in the beginning of the Crick section was maybe their favorite piece of art from War Machine, period. And I kind of went looking for it. Holy crap, is that one awesome.
Undead Pirates, man.
Yeah.
Everybody loves the Undead Pirates.
Yeah, good times there.
So, all is not roses with Superiority. As with previous releases from Privateer, the book suffers from poor editing. In fact, there is one double-page spread in the Kador section that there was quite the hullabaloo about.
Brouhaha.
Indeed. Because the page was laid out with text from Apotheosis, and then printed with text from Apotheosis, so pages 124 and 125, the text has been replaced with stickers over the regular text, with the text that's supposed to be there. Now, to Privateer's credit, these are very high-quality stickers. They mesh right in with the look of the page, but that's really indicative of the care that's been given to editing in the rest of the book. I call them like I see them. And there are, words that are misspelled. There are whole sentences that are missing from the ends of some entries.
Oh,
I mean, it's
God.
Just ridiculous. Now, they've got a new guy, I hear, on board that was an editor at Dragon Magazine, I think.
Oh, nice. Paizo Publishing.
So, apparently we're not going to see this kind of problem again, but in a book this beautiful, I just hate to see it.
Yeah, totally.
Now, as far as the content goes, I think it's my favorite book in the War Machine series. Now, I've been playing all the way since the first book, Prime, came out. And the reason that I like it so much is that this is the first book in the series where I've really gotten a feel for what it's like on the front line of these wars that they're waging, right? This is not a superhero book.
Right.
All
yeah.
of the previous books have been, you know, warcasters with all this huge arcane power, the movers and shakers way at the top of the food chain,
mm-hmm.
and this book is all about the guys that are fighting and dying in the mud.
It's the first book that really feels like it has depth to me. You know, like, it was really cool to kind of get the overall story of what was happening in the War Machine portion of the Iron Kingdoms, but you know, we were just talking about it over dinner. This is the first book where you get a sense of what it's like to be a dude.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that.
Yeah.
And it really inspired me as a War Machine player to go out and finally make a themed army. I've been a tournament player for so long, just completely, you know, min-maxing the hell out of all of my armies,
mm-hmm.
that This book, sitting down and reading through it, you know, reading the stories, which actually are very well written,
mm-hmm.
for all their editing flaws.
Even though the Menoth one sucked.
Yeah, but the Signar one was awesome.
The Signar one was awesome.
And just sitting down and going, you know, holy crap, these guys are just out there doing their warlike thing, right? It had a real, like, History Channel feel to it, almost.
It did.
You know, like, watching the World War II documentaries, and I went, crap, I have got to go out there and, you know, put the tournament armies away and just base an army around one of these one of these actual theaters of war. And this is another thing, actually, about the book that I really like, is each army has a section describing in great detail how the army is put together.
Totally.
So you can drill all the way down to a specific platoon that mm-hmm. you want to field, if you want to,
mm-hmm.
within the scope of the overall army, and you know where it's fighting, all of the named solos, they tell you what theaters they're in, what fronts, what units they're attached to. I mean, it's really thorough in that kind of thing, and that got me really excited about actually playing out some of this stuff on the tabletop instead of just cherry-picking units that I think will beat the other guy's face.
And boy howdy, does that sure kind of seem like such a great opportunity for decals.
yeah, hey, Fighting Piranha, are you listening to this?
Yeah, you got to get those going, man. I need some metafixes. So one of the strange questions I have for you is, I'm looking over at my shelf right now, and I've got a copy of Prime, I've got a copy of Escalation, I've got two copies of Apotheosis, and now I have Superiority. This is the first time they've done one of their books in a non-ultra-fancy version in a hardcover, aside from the Horde's Primal book. How do you feel about that as a miniatures player? Is that useful to you? Do you use it as a shelf reference? What do you think?
Well, I actually painted some of the models that appear in the book, so I got contributor copies of the hardcover and the softcover.
Okay.
And the hardcover is the one that I use.
Where can people find these models in the book? What did you do?
I painted the alternate Coven battle group that's in the back of the Crix section.
Okay.
When it talks about battle groups. I'll see if I can find the page while I talk.
Yeah.
So I like the hardcover because mm-hmm. I think the hardcover is much more durable
mm-hmm.
Than the softcover is. I like the heft of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the binding feels more solid okay. on the hardcover than the softcover. The softcover is lighter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit thinner, obviously, because you don't have the cover to worry about.
Right.
But I like the heft of a hardcover book, mm-hmm. and I'm happy that they did it both ways.
Me too.
So my work's on page 160 and 161 for anyone that cares.
Awesome. I think we're going to jump over, and I'm going to ask you some questions here real quick. Tell me, I know you kind of talked about it, but sum up overall production values for the book.
Fabulous. Yes. Absolutely phenomenal, except for the editing problems in mm-hmm. terms of design, layout, printing, quality of the materials, top-notch. Almost Cadwallon.
Wow. And aside from the editing Cadwallon, we all know where that went. How playable are the models out of this book and so forth and the rules?
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Okay, quick topic of controversy. Cavalry's got some people riled up. Cavalry is exciting others. Where do you fall in that category?
I'm in the excited.
Okay.
I think that it lends itself to some new play styles.
Okay.
I think that cavalry are, I mean, they're just as different from infantry as warjacks are from infantry.
Okay.
I think that they'll replace light warjacks in some people's lists,
okay.
or rather, that they'll replace some light warjacks in some people's lists. I think the new rules are pretty cool. I think that they've translated the dynamic of real-world cav into game terms in a way that is playable mm-hmm. and also quote-unquote realistic.
Nice.
I'm a fan. And mm-hmm. I think the models look pretty cool.
Oh, they're so nice.
They're a pain to put together, but that's a topic for another review.
Right. So I'm guessing you're going to feel that the overall value for this book is pretty high.
It's the best book in the series, hands down. If you only bought one book and you had some other way of learning the rules, this would be the one.
It really feels to me like after reading Escalation, which, you know, is what its cover, you know, and name implies. It escalates the game to a whole new level. I never got a sense of what Apotheosis was trying to achieve other than being just a really pretty art book. And this, I think if you owned Prime and this book, you're good to go.
Yeah, I think so. Escalation's nice, too. I mean, there are some units in Escalation that are pretty core to all the different factions,
mm-hmm.
and the campaign in Escalation actually is a lot of fun to play.
Okay.
And Apotheosis was more of a campaign book than an army book or a rules book. Superiority is really returns to Prime, I think,
mm-hmm.
as a book that's just about putting an army together, building an army. The real difference is that it encourages you, both by the units that are introduced and by the fluff that's included, to do it in a thematic way.
I think we're done.
Great.
You got anything else?
I don't. Thanks a lot for listening, and check us out at 2d6feet.com. Good night.
Thank you, 2d6 Feet in a Random Direction, for that review.
Hooray.
Of War Machine Superiority. Awesome stuff.
It sounded very movie phone like.
I channel that guy sometimes. And ooh, it's disturbing.
That is creepy.
Yes. If you know the name of the currently playing segment that you'd like to record, do it now. Again, I have managed to play some games, and I am in a play group. We played some more Thunder Road, and all I have to add to that discussion is that if you're playing this game, Thunder Road, and you blow up a car, really the appropriate thing to do is to do your best, hair metal guy voice. Like, if you've seen Homestar Runner and you're familiar with the group Limousine, you should do that guy's voice and just kind of go, Thunder Road! Whenever anything blows up. It's,
wow, alrighty then.
I think that's the responsible thing to do.
Okay.
And in fact, we continued doing it through the other two games that we played on that evening, which we had a great game of Universalis.
Nice.
And this is a game I picked up the revised edition at Gen Con. The thing totally reads like stereo instructions. It's like hard to figure out. It's not hard to figure out how to play from the text, but there's a lot more text than it seems like there needs to be. Because I had this game explained to me in 5 minutes right before we started playing. But then we just jumped in, and we built this kind of great, pulpy, yet cyberpunk story, where the first thing that anybody set forth was, the entire story has to take place on trains. And we just went with this whole underground, unspecified place, train story with some murders, and somebody had to be investigated, and I could go into all the details, that would be boring. Suffice it to say that we had a great time and a great role-playing experience, and we were done in an hour and 15 minutes. That's the part that really amazes me.
Nice.
Yeah. And,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that the game is flexible enough that you could make it, you could stretch it out a little more and have more of a conventional role-playing experience with it. And I think those two things would go hand in hand. You would have to do both. Or you could potentially even do it faster and sketchier. But I don't know that you need to get it faster than an hour, you know. We had a blast with Universalis, and then I got to play some Descent.
Yikes.
And I that seems to give you guys the fear. I don't know. It didn't give me the fear.
Well, how long did you play?
I played for probably an hour and a half.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a real game of Descent.
Yeah, it does seem like it goes as long as a conventional dungeon crawl goes.
Right.
But within that, I think it's good tools for a dungeon crawl. And maybe better tools for a dungeon crawl than D&D 3.5.
Oh,
that's a bold statement.
You're more limited in what you can do in some ways. But I think, again, they are limits. They are productive constraints. They are limits that make sense. You know?
All right.
When you just want to have a dungeon crawl experience, and you just want to, you know, not spend time prepping, but just bust it out of the box and have a lot of fun, I think Descent is certainly worth the purchase price if that's something that you're going to do a lot of.
Does it mean an expansion?
If it got a lot of play, I think it would need an expansion. Certainly, if you were playing it every week or something like that, you would certainly be hungry for an expansion at this point.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't think it's the kind of game that I would pull out every week, but I tend to want more from a role-playing experience than a dungeon crawl, because I don't get super into a dungeon crawl. I actually bagged out of this game early, and I think they played some more turns. I bagged out just because it was late and I was way tired. And we played, you know, three games. So
yeah,
there is that. But I think I got more than enough of a taste of it to get a feel for what it was about. And I think it's about something that I can get behind. Yeah.
But it's not really a role-playing thing. You say you've got enough out of the role-playing experience, but Descent is not a role-playing game.
No, it's not a role-playing game at all. Yeah, I mean, as far as... It's a big enough board game that it has a lot of what people want out of a role-playing dungeon crawl.
Okay.
That's what I would say. But yeah, what about y'all?
Go, Alan.
Okay. I did my weekly D&D game and actually busted out a prop that I was working on, a riverboat, big, long, you know, like 2.5 foot long prop that I've been working on.
Whoa.
Nice. You know, not great yet, but I'm still working on that. And actually, I was dividing my time between that and some actual terrain that I've been making with, you know, more than just slapping together some moss with some twigs and calling it a tree. Actually pouring resin and...
Dude!
Holy crap!
Stuff. So, yeah, I'm getting together some rice paddy type fields for a fictional plant that's in my game world, and we're going to have at it once these things are cured.
Wow.
Holy crap, that's amazing.
That's totally impressive. This is, as far as I know, this is the first time that you've attempted anything like this.
Completely.
I have seldom heard of anyone actually building terrain for role-playing miniatures, specifically for role-playing games.
Well, this is all the influence of my friend Steve Connie in our group, who's done a lot of modeling for various enterprises. So he's been giving me some guidance here and there, and I just plunged right in, and we'll see how it turns out.
Awesome.
On top of that, I managed to play Atlas Games' Seismic, which was pretty decent. I want to give it another couple of playthroughs before I really make any sort of verdict.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it and really stomped Joe. He lost.
We need that on the record.
Yes, I do. He hurt. And then inspired by your comments last show, I busted out my copy of Thunder Road.
Oh, nice.
And then I hurt. And man, did he wail on me.
Oh.
Falling further and further behind. Can I get repaired in time? No, I can't. Oh.
Well, they have repair rules?
They do.
Oh, wow.
Are you not playing with those?
I guess we're not playing right.
Thunder Wrong is what you're playing.
Oh.
Oh. Okay. Sorry.
Chris, how about you for what's your play been?
I've been playing a lot since we last talked. I played some more Dreamblade. Still having a good time with that. Still having the same figures. Haven't bought any more. I played some Pirates. Had a good time. Got stomped. So bad.
That seems to be a pattern.
Yeah.
You mentioned that last time.
Oh, it was bad. And I played Prophecy, which I mentioned a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
It took a lot longer than I wanted it to. It was like a 2.5 hour... Was it, wait, 2.5 to 3 hour game, and that was just a lot longer than it needed to be.
Mm.
But fun. Had a good time. Had a chance to play Funny Friends, but kind of bailed out and went and ate instead. Would have had a chance to play Mark 1, but I was kind of done for the night.
Okay.
But I did play Ticket to Ride for the first time.
Really?
Yeah.
First time, yeah.
Well, it's one of those games that's just been on my list, and then something else comes up, and I'd rather play that instead.
Yeah.
But another couple, and my wife and I got together, and we all played it, and they'd played it before, but we hadn't, and my wife loved it. I had a great time. Don't really kind of, as a gamer, like the amount of luck that's involved in the game at times. Because, man, if you were behind, you can tell. You know, you're just like, I know that things are hidden and blah, 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 but I am here. The whole rest of the group is on the other side of the board, and there's no way you can come back from that, you know? So that's the one thing I don't like about the game. But saying that, we played it 6 more times. So
Wow.
That's I'm going to be picking that up at work. So,
all right, cool.
Well, it was nice because my wife liked it, and she's not a gamer, and when I can get her into playing something, it's a lot of fun. So
excellent.
You should try Ticket to Ride Europe, see if you like it.
I don't think I
have
any role-playing games under my belt since we've last talked. I missed the last two sessions of my Iron Kingdoms game, and that's only bi-weekly, so.
Oh.
Yeah. But I've got a Cold City game coming up.
Oh.
And I've got another session of Docks on the Vineyard coming up.
Right on. I don't know if you heard, we seem to have some wires crossed. Alan just said the Ticket to Ride Europe may be more your speed.
It's interesting. I looked through the rules for that one, and I'm more interested in Marklin.
Really?
I like the passenger component of it.
So. Yeah, I have been hearing from folks that Marklin is actually the one that's a hit with gamers, especially with people who have some background in train games. Okay, let's wrap this thing up before we all explode.
Go.
Okay, we're doing
God's sake, go!
We're going to have to talk some more about Prophecy in the future, because I know we've talked about War Angel at some point in the past, and Gen Con SoCal coming up. But for now, we're gonna take the ladder out of this thing before it crashes. Thank you all for listening once again. My name is Mike Sugarbaker.
Don't waste time! Move!
Who? What? Huh?
Sorry. I'm Alan Sugarbaker.
and I'm lagging so hard that you all figure it out.
Okay. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thunder Road!